Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films from all genres and bring you celebrity interviews every single week.
Very good, Lewis. Short but pointless.
Pizza dude's got 30 seconds.
You want me to yank you out of that seat and shake it out of you?
I don't have it. Screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
And now, here is your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD. Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined, as always, by my co-host, JD. I'm feeling a little witchy. JD, how are you?
Season of the Witch.
You're still on the whisper.
Yeah, no, I can't get it. I was spent all day at work. Anytime somebody would ask me something, I'd whisper that to them.
Uh-huh.
It didn't go over well.
Okay. People are like, why are you whispering? You're kind of creeping me out, dude. Okay. Well, if you don't know what we're talking about, go back to our last episode in the archives there and check out our review of Season of the Witch, which it's been renamed on IMDb. I don't know if you saw that, JD. It no longer has Halloween 3 in front of it. Kind of interesting.
Rebranded, so, huh?
Yeah, they did rebrand it a little bit. But we're going to dive into some of that stuff for sure. But before we do that, I want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. As always, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, IGTV, YouTube. You can follow us on the web at Back in Time Pod. You can follow us on social media at Back in Time Pod as well. And JD, speaking of backintimepod.com, what's going on over at the blog, man?
So we've definitely had some good articles come out, some good lists the last couple of weeks. Most recently, the top Billy Zane movies. And if you don't like Billy Zane, you're insane. But yeah, I'm scratching my head right now on what to do next. So if you have any thoughts or ideas, tweet them out to me and be like, hey, do a top five actors named, I don't know, Paul.
It's actor's
like
name,
the most boring name I could think of.
Actor's name, Marty. That'd be kind of cool.
I actually, I literally thought about that earlier.
Okay.
And well, I couldn't think of any actors named Marty.
I'm sure there's more than
maybe
Marty McFly.
Be characters named Marty?
Yeah. There you go. Characters named Marty.
We got Marty McFly, Marty McSuperfly. We have Marty Crane from Frasier.
Marty Jannetty from AEW Wrestling.
He's still wrestling?
No, I'm sorry. Not Marty. I was thinking of Joey Janela, not Marty. Mixing them up. Long day, man. Long day of work.
Yeah, I don't know the last time somebody said the name Marty Jannetty.
Gosh, he was good back in the day. He actually still does it, which is kind of crazy to think about. Let's talk about last week, though. You know, we had a couple good episodes come out. We had the Zombieland review, Double Tap. We also had our Halloween party pod. But let's go all the way back to our Friday the 13th episode. What was your feedback on our Friday the 13th part 2 episode?
So I did receive a hateful text message about how the hate that I sort of threw out was unappreciated. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, Halloween's a great time of the year. It's kind of our season of the witch. And I thought the episode was pretty, it was a good episode. And, you know, yeah, we had our frustrations with the movie for sure, but I mean, audience, keep in mind, we do this because our opinions are different than your opinions. And tweet us, text us, email us, call us. Do what, if you don't like what we're saying, let us know. And we can have an educated discussion about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, and this is how we kind of wrapped up that episode, you did say that you really love the movie. You just don't think it's good when you look at it by itself. And I tend to agree with that, although I did enjoy it. I thought it was fun. Yeah, I mean, what else can you say? We talked about it for about 2 hours. So between the full episode and the teaser, go check it out in our archives right now. But let's get to the reason we're here, man. We're here to talk a little Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. So this is a 1982 American sci-fi horror film and the third installment in the Halloween film series. It is the first film to be written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace. John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, the creators of the Halloween franchise, return as producers, as well as John Carpenter for the score and music. And the film tells the story of Dr. Dan Challis, along with Ellie Grimbridge, who travel to the small town of Santa Mira, California, where he discovers that Silver Shamrock Novelties, a company run by Connell Cochran, I don't know if I'm saying his first name right, is attempting to use the mystic powers of the Stonehenge rocks to kill children when they all wear his mask and watch the Silver Shamrock commercial. Halloween 3 is the only entry in the series that does not feature the series antagonist Michael Myers. And after the film's disappointing reception at the box office, he was brought back in, you guessed it, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. Let's stop there and take a pause. JD, what do you think about the idea of Halloween kind of branching out and telling different stories? Because I actually really like that and kind of feel like they were a little ahead of their time.
Yeah, it's an interesting take, especially when we're looking at it through the lens of one that came out, that it is before its time. You look at so many popular anthology movies that existed, and I mean, even Twilight Zone was essentially an anthology where they told different stories from the Twilight Zone. So I appreciate what they were trying to do, and we'll get into this with the full review, but did they actually stick the landing?
We'll find out. But what I do like about it, and I kind of compare this to you before we hit record, is almost like American Horror Story, where they're taking characters that we know from the original and then putting them in a different role in the movie, a la Annie Brackett, who comes back in a completely different role. She's, you know, Dr. Dan's ex-wife. And it just, the minute she came on screen, I had the biggest smile. Like, you recognize the voice as soon as you hear it. And I was just like, I love that. Like, I think if they would have done maybe a little bit more of that, they might have been able to do something different. And I, for one, would not have been mad to miss the return of Michael Myers. I think that might be the worst out of the entire series, in my opinion.
So what you're basically saying is they're assholes for creating an entirely iconic horror legend and not running with it. I'm just giving you shit. No, I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that they had essentially two different franchises and two different ideas. I think that they used Halloween as a title to both their success and their detriment. Same as Friday the 13th. I mean, it's a great title, but at the same time, what happened on Friday the 12th, Jason Voorhees, he's just eating a grilled cheese sandwich and some tomato soup.
Tomato soup sounds really good.
Doesn't it? Yeah, I agree.
I'd eat it all day if I could. Okay. Well, let's keep going along here. Talk a little bit about some of the other points here. So just want to touch on the production a little bit. When they approached the creators, John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, about a third Halloween film, they were kind of reluctant. I guess they just didn't want to do it at the end of the day. But they agreed to participate in a project only if it was not a direct sequel to Halloween 2, which meant Michael Myers would not be the focus of the film. They got the $2.5 million budget, and then they go out, they tell this new story. That's interesting. I guess that kind of answers the questions of why they did it. I would love to hear more from John Carpenter now, if he looks back on that with like any type of regret, if he wishes that maybe the franchise would have just stopped there and then been rebooted 20 years later with Rob Zombie and just kicked off from there. What do you think?
I think you bring up a great question, and you raise some great points, because at the end of the day, you know, much like the movie Trick or Treat was a fantastic flick of small pieces, the idea of turning Halloween into a new institution for movies was pretty smart of them, but I really think they just tried to divide and conquer. And I want to say that his response would probably not be the most business minded or savvy sounded.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the score. So John Carpenter's back. I think he does a great job. There's definitely a lot of like that 1980 synthesizer stuff going on with the track, but it kind of reminded me not only a mix of like Halloween, but I also got a little bit of what's that movie with Kurt Russell he does? Lost in
Escape from New York.
There you go. Yeah, it definitely has a lot of that in there too. Did you pick up on any of that as you're kind of watching it?
Yeah, and John Carpenter's amazing at what he does, so I definitely appreciate his skill and bringing that skill to this movie for sure.
Yeah. Great. Andy was back for the latest one. I think he's doing the sequels as well. He's underrated as a musical artist. He does really great work.
He does. You're absolutely right.
All right. Well, you know, we're going to talk more about things kind of as we go along here, and we'll just kind of jump into the review. So let's take a quick little break, and we'll come back on the other side with the full review for Season of the Witch. Talk to you guys in a minute.
Hey, this is Phantom Dark Dave, and I'm the host of Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. Right now, you're listening to the Back in Time podcast, which features Kyle and JD, who have both been on my podcast. So if you're listening here, you need to listen to them there and come check me out. Got everything from horror, science fiction, comic books and cartoons, and some outstanding comedy if you just like shooting the breeze. You can find me over on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Google Play.
All right, we are back, ready to dive into this full review here. So the film begins. I really like what they're trying to do here with this opening credit scene. I just, unfortunately, like 1982, the technology just is not there yet, but they're trying to do like this computer, almost like an etch-a-sketch of a pumpkin getting made. I don't know. I thought it was cool. I get what they were doing. You know, I props to them for trying it at this point with the lack of technology that they had. And then we get a graph that pops up and says we are in Northern California, and it is Saturday, October 23rd. So we see somebody running in the distance, and we're going to come to find out this character's name is Harry Grimbridge. And he stops running and turns, and we look and see a car is following him. I love the score here from John Carpenter. It gives you all of the Halloween feels that you love. Again, I mentioned this earlier, a little Escape of New York in there as well. And then finally, Harry is caught by this man in a suit, and they kind of wrestle to the ground, and he's able to like pull this chain on a car, which was being held up by some blocks. And then the car comes forward and just smashes this guy to death, and he's able to kind of wiggle out between the cars and run off into the junkyard. JD, what did you think of this opening scene here?
I'm with you. I definitely appreciate the atmosphere that they set up, and I think it does a great job of setting the scene. I wish I could have been in the theaters and, you know, saw this opening scene for the first time with everyone else. Were you expecting to see Michael Myers off the gate? What were people thinking? I mean, we talked about this in the teaser trailer, and I really hope to get some feedback from some of our more seasoned listeners.
Season of the Witch.
But no,
Sorry.
Justin, follow me.
it's a cool opening scene, and I am torn again because I wish that this movie had its own legs to stand on.
Okay, good point. It says an hour later, we have Harry Grimbridge busting into the junkyard, into the security room, and he grabs the security guard and kind of falls to the floor, and he just says, "They're coming. They're coming." We smash to a house next, and we get to see a familiar face here. Nancy Keyes is back in the Halloween franchise. Of course, we last saw her in the original Halloween as Annie, and she's playing Linda, who is the ex-wife to Daniel, one of our two main leads. Daniel gets a call and has to rush back to the hospital. He's a doctor, and we get back to the hospital, and the man is being brought in on a stretcher. Of course, that's Harry, and we hear on the TV, 8 More Days to Halloween song playing, which I really love, and I'll probably insert here in the background. The man says, "They're gonna kill us. They're gonna kill all of us." Daniel prescribes Thorazine. Now, if you remember this from the first movie, that is the drug that they prescribed Michael Myers in the hospital as well. It's a drug that suppresses mental, mood, and psychotic disorders. So I love the tie-in here, JD. What do you think about that just from a writing standpoint?
It's definitely cool, and I think it goes into the whole world that, as you suggested, that we're trying to build.
Yeah.
It's a nice little callback. It's a little nod. Props to you for picking that up. I definitely didn't put two and two together, which is fantastic by you. That's why you are KAutry29 on Twitter.
There I am. Now, outside, we have a shot of our bad guy, and he's dressed in a suit. This kind of gave me a little bit of a Stranger Things type of vibe, where the bad guys are these, like, well-dressed people. They keep showing up in cars. So I got to think that the creators of Stranger Things maybe took a little something from Season of the Witch, which is kind of cool. And then we cut back into the hospital. Daniel and Nurse Agnes walk down the hallway, and she's like, there's food in there. Your cot's all set up. And he's like, I should have married you. And then slaps her on the ass. And then she slaps him back, and then they just laugh about it. Well, it's 2019. Can't do that anymore. What do you think about that, JD?
Yeah, I love watching old movies for sure, and seeing this level of not familiar with social surroundings that we have nowadays, yeah. Which I think, you know, to an extent, we go a little overboard with how constructive we get to criticize people for every little move they make. But it's funny. To an extent, it's pleasant to see something and be like, hey, they're just playing grab ass. Come on.
Literally. I mean, it's completely harmless. Like, he smacks her on the butt. She laughs, smacks him on his butt. And then they're just like, let's go sit down. So we see the man in the suit enter the hospital, and we really don't get to see his face here. Kind of stays on his legs, which I thought was a cool shot, and starts making his way down the hallway, and then walks into Harry's room, who's indisposed here. I mean, he's resting. He's under the drug suppressant that they gave him, the Thorazine. And then this guy just walks over, covers his mouth with one hand, and then takes his two fingers, reaches down, grabs the guy by the bridge of the nose, and just starts twisting until he breaks it, while the guy is suffocating as well. We see Harry's legs go limp, and then the nurse, Agnes, comes in. She's like, what the hell are you doing here? And he just slowly walks past her and starts making his way down the hallway. We hear her scream. Daniel comes running out and gives chase, but unfortunately, the guy manages to make his way out. He shuts the door to his car and then starts dumping gasoline right on his face, and then flicks open the lighter, and the car goes up in flames and just explosion. I actually thought this was really cool. JD, what do you think of this?
From a writing standpoint, it's interesting, because what you always want to do is you want to take every situation that you're in, and anytime you give an answer to a simple question, like what's going to happen to old boy, he's going to get killed. But now we have the question of, why did dude burn himself?
Right.
So the mystery, while solving itself, becomes more and more complex. And you have to do it in a way where you balance your story and you balance your characters, so it's not just completely situational, but at the same time, mysterious, and you want to know, like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm. We cut to another scene here. Daniel calls home to tell Linda that he can't pick up the kids tonight. And that's where we actually hear him say for the first time that it's his ex-wife. And he's just getting an earful here. She doesn't want to hear it. She's like, why aren't you picking up the kids? This is your turn. So anyway, he's like, I'll take them on Saturday, the whole day, I promise. It's just, you know, somebody died here at the hospital and there's cops. She does not care at all. And then we see the cops kind of surrounding the room. And then Daniel looks at this, like, pumpkin hat. And it's, I don't know if it's a hat or a mask. It's kind of hard to tell. It's got the Shamrock logo, which we talked about at the beginning part of the episode here. I'm not sure exactly at this point what the Shamrock has to do with the plot or where we're going with this. And then we meet one of our main leads here. Very short scene, but we are introduced to Ellie Grimbridge, played by Stacey Nelkin. JD, what did you think of her here as our lead actress?
It's a good segue and a good introduction. And I like the way that we have the scenes balanced so far with tension and exposition, and then to bring her in as the lead is kind of classic for its time in terms of how, you know, things, again, were balanced and delivered.
Yeah, and it's a tough, like, entrance for her, too, because she's got to come identify her dad's body, who has been mangled. And then it's just like we have a shot of her just standing in the hallway, and then Daniel sees her, and that's where we kind of cut and move on to the next scene. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm very interested to see how her character is going to develop here over the next hour and 20 minutes, because we're only about 20 minutes into this thing. Rock and rolling. I really like the start of this. Daniel's at the bar next, and the bartender turns the channel for him on the TV, and the commercial pops up for the Shamrock, but then it's the original Halloween movie playing. I actually thought this was a kind of a cool touch, and it was a commercial for the Halloween movie. What did you think of this?
Definitely a good touch, especially as we alluded to earlier, there's no connections, there's no Michael Myers, there's no Loomis in this movie, but they do leave a little thread tying it back to the original, which is it's a good touch. And that, and the what's the name of the medicine?
Oh gosh, you're gonna put me on the spot here. We should remember this. We just talked about it.
Yeah,
Thorazine.
A few minutes ago.
Yeah, Thorazine. Well, let's listen to our first clip here with Ellie.
My name's Ellie Grimbridge.
I know. Dan Chalice.
I know. One of the nurses told me I could find you here. I saw you at the funeral. Thank you.
I'm sorry about your father.
Did my father say anything to you the night he died?
Yeah. Said, tell Ellie I love her.
Bad liar, but thank you anyway.
Wait a second. I saw something that night. I don't know. Your father came into the hospital. I thought he was crazy, out of his mind. He's hanging onto a Halloween mask. He wouldn't let it go. And what he said was, they're going to kill us all. And in a little while, he was dead. And I don't know what the hell is going on.
JD, first impressions on Ellie here.
It's interesting the way that she sort of comes into this bar. And I love that old boy is just smoking and drinking and wants to watch some sports. She just brings a level of youthful energy and exuberance to trying to find out where Pops is.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. So she's going to take Dan to the family convenience store next. And they kind of check out his daily activity log that he kept. And one of the to-do items was to pick up more of these Shamrock Halloween masks. Dan turns and says, yeah, that's the one he was carrying the night I saw him. And then the next day he was supposed to have dinner, we find out, with a woman, but he never showed and never called her either. So Ellie thinks that her father ran into trouble somewhere between here and Santa Mira, which is where they make the masks. That's where the factory is at. So we're getting a little bit of a setup here. JD, what do you think about the setup?
It's definitely a little bit mystifying. It's a little bit spooky. Like, it's not what I was anticipating it to be. It was a lot more procedural and a lot less classic horror.
Yeah.
Than I thought it would be, but the fact that they go on this path to detective.
Dan's going to call his ex-wife next to tell her that he once again can't make it. And then he gets into the car with Ellie, and we are headed to the mask factory. They pass a sign that reads, "Welcome to Santa Mira, home of the Silver Shamrock Novelties." They drive down the street, and they see everyone's just kind of watching them from the windows, very expressionless. And then we see a camera up on a telephone pole that is recording them, so everything's being monitored. And then they pull up to the factory, and Ellie says she's just not ready for this. She feels like they need a plan. So Dan's like, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's rent a couple hotel rooms, and you know, we'll pose as potential buyers. So they pull up to this motel, and then the owner takes them in, shows them a room. He says it's cozy, it's quiet, and the price is right. But he's Irish. And then Dan tells Ellie to keep him occupied, and he runs over to the office and checks the recent tenant list, and that's where he finds Harry's name listed. The owner turns and says, "Oh, there's Mr. Cochran now." And the family car, or the familiar car from earlier, slowly kind of passes by as he waves at him, and he goes, "Oh, that's Connell Cochran. He's a great man and a true genius." And then we get a couple offbeat characters here. You know, they're not really going to play much of a role right away, but we do meet Marge, and then we're going to meet the Kupfer family, Buddy and Betty, and their little redheaded child, probably named Charlie. He looked like a Charlie, don't you think?
Yeah, kid's definitely a Charlie.
Yeah, for sure. So Dan enters the motel room and tells Ellie this place is a zoo, and he offers Ellie that he would go find another room or he can stay in the car on the floor. And she's like, "Where do you want to stay, Dr. Chalice?" He's like, "That's a dumb question." And then moves in for the kiss. This is very 80s filmmaking here. The totally unnecessary love plot. What'd you think of this?
It caught me by surprise. I was not expecting this. Again, as we've talked in recent episodes and even earlier in this episode, 2019 scene like this doesn't hold up. Where do you want to sleep? Where do you think? Kisses.
Isn't she a little torn up about her dad? I mean,
it just came out of nowhere. And then
hours later, she's like, "Let's fuck."
And he's not even on. I mean, he has a great mustache, but it's not like he's Burt Reynolds or Tom Selleck or anything like that. He's
not Tom Selleck, that's for sure.
You would let Tom Selleck give your bean a whiz.
Give him a mustache, right? Now, it's late at night. We see the camera scanning left to right, and the town is a ghost town at this point. Dan leaves a liquor store, and he's stopped by a guy in an alley, and he scares the crap out of the guy. And then he goes, "Sorry, didn't mean to scare you, but I saw you carrying that bottle and thought it looked a little heavy. I ain't got no diseases or anything. You mind if I take a drink?" Dan's like, "All right, guy." So he gives him a little swig, and then he asks him if he knows anything about this Cochran character. And the guy says, "Yeah, you know, he made the town what it is today. But let me tell you something, mister. He brought in every factory worker from the outside. So you think a local boy like me would get a hire? No way." And then he yells at Cochran, "Fuck you," to the sky. He says he's probably listening, and this will probably be the last Halloween for that factory of his. There's some strange shit going on there. And then he tells Dan that he's going to burn that place down. So, I don't know, a little Orange County there, but he's going to burn that place down. What do you think?
Yes, I had it echoing in my head. I'm going to burn this mother down. Gosh, we need to do that movie.
Look at me, I'm kick-ass.
For those of you who don't know, Kyle is slapping his belly right now.
Sure am. Here we go. Now the man is walking through the junkyard, and he's met by a couple of the guys in suits. And he's like, "Oh, come on, guys. You know I was kidding about that." He drops to his knees, and then the man in the suit just grabs him by the head and literally just twists his head off. I thought this was pretty awesome. What do you think?
I couldn't tell if he was twisting it off, if they were cutting it off, if they had like some sort of like barbed wire around his neck. But it was pretty brutal. So I give them points. Like, this was unexpected and brutal. Fucking love that in a movie.
Ellie is walking back to the motel room when Marge lays on the horn and scares the crap out of her. And again, she says, "Sorry, didn't mean to scare you." JD, how do you not mean to scare someone when you lay on the horn as they walk by your car and they don't see you?
Because you're an asshole.
Right.
They are an asshole.
No other excuse for it. Like, and then to do it and then pop out and go, "Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you." Like, it's so dumb. I just didn't get it, but.
You only had one goal, and it was to freak somebody out. Take credit for it. Accept it. Be an asshole. Kyle, you are an asshole.
Anyway, Marge goes inside her room, and she places this shamrock coin on the table. And then Dan calls Teddy back at the lab Teddy's a female, by the way. And she tells him that someone mixed up the envelopes here. So the evidence that might be getting tampered with. And Dan's like, all right, you know what? I'll call back tomorrow, but you know, keep looking into it. So he goes back inside the motel room where Ellie is waiting for him in lingerie now. It's beak time, man. We haven't beaked in a while, but here we are.
Just not expecting this from a writing standpoint. What does this really provide to the overall arc of the story?
And there's no setup either, because she takes a shower and then she like runs out because she's cold. And then he comes back in and she's like, check out my black lingerie. And I'm like, why? Why is this going on? Just cut these scenes. God.
Like you said, like her character flaw in this instance is potentially mourning over her lost papa. And why does that equate in beak?
I don't know. Well, that's probably my only gripe with the movie so far, is this super unnecessary love angle with a woman, again, who should be grieving her father's death pretty hard here. Now, at one point, as they're laying in the bed and they've already had sex very clearly, Dan says, wait, how old are you? And then she says, I'm older than I look. What does that mean?
That's very dangerous territory. I'm older than I look.
So he banged her and then cuddled afterwards and was like, wait, how old are you? Did nobody at that, while the filming was going on, they're like, man, that dialogue's a little fucked up. Maybe we should say something.
Right, because best case scenario, she's season of the bitch. Best case scenario, she's 18. Worst case scenario, she's 13.
Right?
Either way, it's a creepy, creepy roll of the dice.
Yeah, he's every bit of about 47 years old.
Oh, that mustache has seen some horrible nights.
Yeah, an old drape. Now, we're back at Marge's room, and she's just looking at this shamrock that's sitting on the floor, and she picks it up, kind of starts messing with it a little bit, and then she kind of peels back the chip on the inside, and then a laser shoots out of the coin and into her face, leaving her mangled and just her face torn open. There are spiders crawling out of her mouth. This hasn't aged well, but I really appreciate what they're trying to do. Anyway, well, let's keep going on. We'll come back to this. So Dan and Ellie get dressed and they go to check out what's happened, because clearly they all heard the laser. And then they see cars pull up and all these guys in white coats are shuffling in and out of the room and they're taking her away on a stretcher. And Dan's like, hey, I'm a doctor. What's going on here? Just slept with a minor. And the motel owner's like, don't worry. She's going to get the best care possible. And he's like, by who? Mr. Cochran, of course. And then he pulls up and gets out of the car. Let's take a listen to our first clip with Mr. Cochran.
Mr. Cochran, good to see you, sir.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Rafferty. It's all over, my friends. Just a small accident. The lady's going to get the very best possible treatment. I promise you that.
Where are they taking her?
They're taking her to the factory. So we've the most marvelous facility there for emergency treatment.
JD, I feel like the movie's kind of fallen off the rails a little bit. What do you think of this scene, though, with Mr. Cochran?
Oh, don't trust him as far as I could throw him.
No.
What is he doing with a hospital in his factory?
I mean, he's a snake, man. Literally a snake.
She will receive the best care. We have the best facility in our factory.
Come on, dude. Come on. At least lie and say you're taking her to a hospital or something.
Uh-huh. The next day, it's October 30th. Dad calls Teddy at the lab, and she says that she's starting to wonder if someone has tampered with the body. She's like, I can't find anything in here. And then Dan's like, I need you to look into this Cochran guy. Find out all you know. She's like, well, that's going to cost you some serious dinners. Let me get this right. He's slapping Nurse Agnes's butt anytime he wants. He's insinuating that he can take Teddy out for a nice seafood dinner anytime he wants. And he's sleeping with Ellie? Is he just the biggest pimp ever? What's going on here?
Oh, and don't forget about his ex-wife and his kids.
Right. were they just, when he signed on, was he just like, yeah, I want you guys to treat me like a sex symbol. So yeah. everything needs to come back to the women.
He walks onto set and he's like, and you get my boner, and you get my boner, and you get my boner. And John Carpenter was like, no, no, thank you. And he was like, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, man. Oh. Ellie and Dan arrive at the factory. And then we also meet Buddy and Betty, the Kupfers, who showed up in the RV. Cochran comes out to greet everybody. And he tells them that Buddy has sold the most Shamrock mask out of anybody in the country the past year. They all give him a round of applause. And then they get a guided tour of the facility. I have to say, I thought this was pretty cool, seeing like all the masks getting made from the molds and just kind of seeing the process a little bit. And then Buddy and Dan are kind of looking around at different like toy designs. So they do more than just doing Halloween masks. And then Cochran slides the mask over to the young Kupfer boy. He also mentions that, well, these haven't gone through the final processing, so put this one on. Mr. Kupfner's like, final process? Wonder what that's all about. And then after looking around, Dan starts to notice some strange characters kind of standing there, staring at people, and he starts to put two and two together pretty quickly. The guy that he had saw at the hospital that night that he killed Ellie's dad, they take off. He's like, something's going on here. Something's up. And then they get outside, and Ellie looks over and sees her dad's car. It's sitting in a garage being protected by the guys in the suits. And she tries to run over there, but she gets cut off. What do you think of this scene?
You know, from setting it up from a writing standpoint, it's a little bit lazy because, if I'm not mistaken, we don't have any recollection of this being her dad's car until she points and tells us, that's my pop's car.
Uh-huh.
So if you imagine or reimagine the opening scene being him in that car, it running out of gas, and then him bailing on the car and sprinting off into the woods, it has more of a payoff to it as opposed to just the exposition of, hey, that's my dad's car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a lot of sense right now. I like that. Ellie says that she's scared and it's time to leave. So Dan's like, stay here. I'm going to call the police. So he goes into the office to call the police, but he's getting a dial tone here. Now, interesting fact, as you may know, if you've done any research, and this is the first of, I believe, two different times where the voice operator here, none other than Jamie Lee Curtis. Little cameo role. How about that, JD? Bet you didn't know that, did you, dickhead?
No, I did not. And thank you for calling me out on that, tiny pecker boy.
So as he's talking to the operator here, and well, not talking, but getting the operator tone, the Shamrock commercial is playing on the TV, and it says, one more day to Halloween, Halloween, bop, bop, bop. I've been singing that all day long. So he goes back into the room looking for Ellie, but she's nowhere to be found. And then we look outside, we see five men standing there. They approach and just start busted through the door. So Dan's going to have to crawl through the back window out of the motel. And then we cut to Ellie, who's being escorted into the factory by two men in suits. And then Dan continues to run and hide from place to place, eventually making his way to the factory. And then inside, he's looking for Ellie. He creaks open this door to find this old lady sitting here just knitting away. And he's like, hey, I need to know where the girl's at. And she doesn't answer. He's like, I need to know. And he shakes her. And then a mannequin head falls off. And we see this is not a lady. It's just basically just a mannequin that's been rigged up to knit. As he's doing that, one of the Cochran henchmen comes in, throws him down over the table. He tries to fend him off, punches him a couple times, but no effect at all. He's just Hulk Hogan him here when he's hulking up. Finally, wrestles the guy down and starts punching him in the gut. And then as he's doing that, there's like this yellow goo. And then he pulls out like these electrical wires. We find out these henchmen are robots. I actually thought that was a pretty cool twist. I did not see that coming.
Not yeah.
What do you think?
Well, hey. It's a white wedding. no, we go from here come the men in black to here come the Terminators.
Yeah.
And it did catch me off guard a little bit, because I was thinking, here come the men in black, every time these suited mother effers come in, and couldn't help but make the comparisons that you were making earlier in the episode to Stranger Things with, you know, the well-suited gentleman. And then for him to punch him in the face, and that doesn't do anything, but punch him in the gut, and it just goes right through his stomach to the yellow innards. Hey, why not?
Yeah. All right. Well, Cochran and a few of the guys come over and lead him out of the room, and then they enter a door that says final processing. Cochran says that the internal features were quite easy, but the outside features on these robots were a little bit more tricky. And then one of the robots sneezing, he's like, God bless you. See? Pretty believable, huh? So they enter this big room. They walk down the stairs. We see all these computers. And then there's this big, giant, ancient Stonehenge. And he tells Dan, you would not believe how much trouble we had getting this thing here. Well, obviously, guy. So Cochran pulls up a video of Ellie, and she's all tied to a table, and he says he's going to show him an example so he can see what's going to happen here. We see the Kupfer family is being led into a room, and it's labeled test room. And so it begins here. The young boy puts on his mask. We see the little symbol on the back of his shamrock mask. And then this commercial pops on. It's all the, now it's Halloween. It's what's going to play at 9 o'clock on Halloween day. And the little boy just kind of shrinks down to the ground. His head smashes in, and all these bugs, snakes, and spiders start coming out of his mouth and kill both of the parents. And all Dan can do is watch in horror. JD, I don't understand what's happening when the commercial comes on, but I did think this was pretty cool. What'd you think?
Here come the men in black.
Jim West. Desperado.
Rough Rider. No, you don't got nada.
I knew you want to see this.
Okay. good thing you stopped, because I could go all day. No, it's a cool scene, but where do the bugs and the snakes come from?
I don't know. I guess from the inside of us. So I guess we all have bugs and snakes living in there.
See, I thought that was just feces.
Yeah, that would have made a little bit more sense, but I don't know.
Can you imagine if he gave like a big brown bomb
and
just exploded the room and shit? And then the mom and the dad are like, no, it's getting inside of my mouth. I don't like it. And then they start pooping. And then they start wiping each other's butts with each other's butts.
I like your idea a little bit better, I'm going to be honest.
Thank you.
Well, it's Halloween day now, and kids are flocking to the stores, and they're buying all the shamrock masks, and the commercial tells the kids to be by the TV at 9 o'clock and have your mask and do not miss it. And we see all these different states are popping up, and kids are trick-or-treating. And then Teddy is calling someone about what she found, and she's looking at this microchip that's been burned up, and then she looks at the mask, starts to put two and two together, and she's like, oh crap, I gotta call somebody about this. When she does, she's attacked by one of the bots here who puts a electric screwdriver right through her head. Pretty brutal way to die. Get attacked from behind and a screwdriver through the temple. What do you think of that, JD?
Yeah, I was watching this movie and I was like, oh, okay, the movie's over. This is the last scene.
Right, not even close.
No. I really thought this was like just a coda to the story.
Yeah.
And it was not. And instead it was just a brutal, let's just kill off Teddy. Let's smoke this bitch. Let's put this effing drill all up in her ear. And the only thing that disappointed me is there was no pool of blood on the ground as they zoomed away.
Yeah, good catch. I noticed that as well. Little things, people. It's what makes a difference. Let's listen to a clip of Cochran explaining why he's doing this.
It was the start of the year in our old Celtic lands, and we'd be waiting in our houses of wattles and clay. The barriers would be down, you see, between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in to sit by our fires of turf. Halloween. The festival of Samhain. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago and the hills ran red with the blood of animals and children. Sacrifices are part of our world. Our craft. Witchcraft. To us, it was a way of controlling our environment. It's not so different now. It's time again. In the end, we don't decide these things, you know. The planets do. They're in alignment. And it's time again. The world's going to change tonight, Doctor. I'm glad you'll be able to watch it.
JD, what do you think of this?
Yeah, obviously Cochrane's just a cock.
Cochrane is a cock.
I'm assuming that's why his name is Cochrane, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of these James Bond exposition scenes where it's like, well, let me tell you why I'm doing this. Like, dude, who cares? Obviously, you're crazy. You need some medicine. You need a cup of chamomile tea. You need a foot rub. You need a sudsy bath.
Probably needs a breath mint. I mean, they've been going all day. I haven't seen him brush his teeth one time.
Yeah, well, how often do you brush your teeth?
Once a week.
Yeah, well, just no joke. You're just describing Marty Johnson.
Now, as we leave this scene here, we've got Dan. He's just tied to a chair. He's put in front of a TV. It's 7:50, and guess what's playing on the old television? It's Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis on the screen. I wonder, she must have got some type of payday for this, don't you think?
She has to have.
The voiceover, the commercial, now the movie. Yeah, they probably paid her a couple shekels. Keep her happy.
Another richer.
Cochrane is able to kind of jimmy himself over to the TV here, just kind of slides, and then he kicks it out with his feet and then grabs one of the shards of glass and cuts the tape off of him. They had him tied up to the chair. And then he manages to get himself into this vent and get out of the room. All the while, he actually, and one of the interesting facts I read that when he throws the mask over the camera that's recording him in the room, he did that in one take. Oh. Lucky throw. The director thought it was going to be like an all-day thing because he literally didn't practice it. Like in rehearsals, he just kind of tossed it to the ground.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you have a mustache. You just do things that normal people can't do.
Yep. I feel like they filmed this at the very beginning and they're like, he gets all the women now. We're rewriting this entire script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anybody he comes in contact with, doesn't matter. Dan has, again, managed to get himself into the vent and they finally notice on the cameras that they can't see anything. So they send a couple bots to check it out. But Dan has already made his way outside on top of the factory building. And then he enters into the loading area where we see a bunch of boxes. And he tries to call his ex-wife and tell her about, you know, don't get rid of all the masks. Don't let the kids watch the TV. Ultimately, she just thinks he's drunk. Tells him to go to hell. I mean, can you blame him? Because obviously, he probably cheated on her just by the way he's acted throughout the movie. And then he's ditched his kids like three times now.
And he's has literally spent most of the movie drunk.
Right.
He's at the bar or I need a drink. I can use a drink. What are you doing? Let's get a drink.
And then he's like, why didn't she believe me? What's going on?
And then he was probably like, let's get a drink.
I know. So he makes his way through the building and he finds Ellie and they make their way out of the room as he unties her. Of course, they're seeing everything on the cameras. The bots are on their way. We are at 8:26 p.m. We're 34 minutes away from whatever they're going to try to do here. And we're winding down quickly. JD, what do you think of this? I mean, we're kind of closing down the movie here. What do you think so far?
I like the countdown. I like the sense of urgency that we are given that they have until 9 p.m. to save the day. Like, mm-hmm. It's cool. It feels like a video game where you've got the counting clock in the lower right hand side of the screen that's just blinking and giving you anxiety and just ruining your life. And you're just like, I can't turn the corner. And you just want to throw the controller through the screen. And
So Dan and Elliot made their way into the control room where Cochran is. And it's kind of ridiculous. Like, they're in the control room and then they like sneak by with a rack full of like masks, and nobody's like, hey, that rack is moving. Somebody want to check that? And then he just like hides and then nonchalantly like makes his way to the control room, presses all these buttons and just runs off before anybody even sees him. But it works because he grabs a box of these Shamrock chips, microchips, and goes all the way to the top, like catwalk area, and he just drops this box down, and it starts electrifying all the men in the lab, and it's killing all the robot guys. Really, only Cochran is left standing until he turns around and realizes that the Stonehenge is putting off a massive amount of electricity. He's going to take a laser right to the old head here. And that's the end of Cochran. JD, what do you think of this death scene?
If I got to pick the way that I go, I would take massive laser to the forehead any day of the week, because Cochran goes beautifully suited and just takes it like a champ.
He sure does.
He does. Good on him. He was a good villain.
Yeah, so, I mean, Ellie and Dan, I mean, they're safe and sound.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we think. So on the ride home, he's like, we got to do something. We got to call somebody. And then he looks over at Ellie, and she's completely emotionless. At this point, I realized, oh, she hasn't said a word since he took her off the table. And then as I see the emotion, she immediately reaches for his face and tries to kill him, as all the other bots have. So he manages to crash the car and get out. And then he just grabs like a pipe or something. I don't know what he grabbed, but he literally knocks the head off of her. We reveal that she is, in fact, a robot now, wiring and all that stuff. The yellow goo gets back into the car, and her arm is still attached to the door. So as he shuts it, the arm's now attacking him, trying to choke him. I mean, outside of the stupid love angle, if I have one gripe, why? What is this? This was awful.
I want to say the word that you're looking for is jump the shark.
Yeah.
Because with no precedent to, I mean, we jumped the shark once already when he punches the men in black in the stomach and realizes it's a robot. And then now she is a killer Terminator. And just none of him. It's all of it belongs in a serial, not a feature film.
Yeah, there's a term in wrestling they use when somebody is really bad. They call them the drizzling shits. This is the drizzling shits of filmmaking. I just hated this entire scene. I wish it would have just ended with what's next, which is where Dan arrives at the junkyard and we see the guy from earlier. He's the one that we see with Mr. Grimbridge early on. And then he runs in to use the phone, begging them to pull down the commercials. And the first one goes down. Then this little kid turns the channel. The second one goes down. And then the third one keeps going. He's like, you got to take third one down. You got to take it down. You got to take it down. And he's like, he just keeps yelling, stop it, stop it. And then the scene just fades out and we get our credits. I thought the ending was actually pretty cool. What'd you think, JD?
It was very Twilight Zone. And I loved that about it, and that's why I thought it was ending earlier.
Yeah.
Because like we had like this very ambiguous setup of this is it. And then it carries on a little bit more and we get a little bit more. And so I thought the movie was ending like three or four times. And then when this happened, I was like, is this actually the ending? And when it was, I like really appreciated the fact that it was like this just big ambiguous, like you have no idea the effect that this has on the whole wider scope of the world.
Right. Overall, I mean, I know we're both watching this for the first time. I'll get my feedback first. I actually really enjoyed this movie. I thought a couple of things were bad. Some of it has not aged very well, but overall, I really liked where they were going. I do think they were a little bit before their time. I would have liked to have known if there was some type of fourth movie planned. Was it going to be a completely new story? Was it going to be an extension of this? But of course, the critics slammed it. The audience was not happy. And we got the return of Michael Myers in part four. What do you think, JD?
I'm with you. I enjoyed this movie. I don't think that it was necessarily a good movie, but it is enjoyable. And the change of pace from, you know, Halloween 1 and Halloween 2 and then what we eventually get with Halloween 4 makes for a refreshing film that does stand on its own 2 feet. With that said, all of the Terminator mumbo jumbo and, you know, just so much of it just doesn't add up. And it's just a lot of it is just cold and lonely and drags on. And then all of a sudden we have a sex scene. And I swear I saw Bush at one point.
George?
Hey-o. But I know it caught me by surprise. I enjoyed this movie a lot more than I thought I would based on the trailer.
No, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I feel like we need to get a movie, and I don't think it's going to happen with Saw 3, but God, we got to get a movie that we actually really love. I feel like we've done a couple and we're just like, this wasn't great. I mean, on its own, it's an awful movie. We got to get something we really like. That's our goal for November and December. Christmas Vacation, Addams Family Values. We got two picked. We're on a good start. But yeah, I appreciate you guys listening to the episode. As always, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, IGTV, YouTube. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram. We're at Back in Time Pod. We are on Facebook. We're also up on the web, so backintimepod.com. You can follow JD's blog. You can follow me at KAutry29. JD is at Unjust Justin, and for now, we are out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean. Definitely not listen to that Halloween jingle anymore, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Yo, bitch. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time. Happy Halloween.